Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, Rifters, Alan Lee here. Today's show is brought to you by Heck Sauce. With a Schofield Heat rating of 1,760,000 SHU, Heck Sauce is the hottest hot sauce in the world. Every bite is saturated with a taste of 1,000 tortured souls. As its name suggests, Heck Sauce turns any meal into delicious lava and serves humility to your favorite smack talker. Heck Sauce is available on Amazon Prime. Heck Sauce. You can save 30% on Heck Sauce on Amazon with the code HECKSAUS. That's Heck Sauce. HECKSAUS on Amazon.
Excellent. I thought you did very good. Now
I was. That was directed.
You were in character. I like that.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Now, did you feel in the moment?
As a method actor, you know, I was told many times when I studied with Stella Adler, you know, Marlon Brando's teacher, just about Marlon Brando's teacher.
Yeah.
Which I got high marks in a class of 200. Yes, I felt I was in the moment.
Oh.
And under your direction, I was definitely in the moment.
Oh, you were in the moment?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, speaking of Marlon Brando, he's in the news. Did you hear that Richard Pryor had an affair with him or something?
I missed that.
Yeah, it was all Googling and stuff.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I thought that...
You didn't hear that?
No, I didn't. I missed that.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, honestly, like, who cares? You know what I mean? Like... If you were around back then, you know, everyone would sleep with Marlon Brando.
True.
Right?
True.
Because he was like the number one actor in the world.
He was definitely, well, there was Montgomery Clift.
Yeah, but Marlon was pretty.
Then there was James Dean.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. James Dean was pretty good.
But you want to know something? Marlon Brando, to my understanding, got a little bit angry. You know how comics steal each other's material and they get angry?
Mm-hmm.
James Dean had a leather jacket, like a motorcycle leather jacket, and you know Marlon Brando had just done a movie with a leather jacket,
right?
And he said, "Ah, that's hack." We, you know,
he said that.
No, he said he got angry. He said, "Ah, you know, can't you come up with something? What do you have to copy me?" Yeah. Honestly, you can look that up.
Oh, I thought you did very good for the Rifters out there. Alan was like, "I really want to read the sponsor because I'm." I got to practice a new monologue or something.
Oh, like, all right. My God. You know all what? Right. This is what makes me your sidekick.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like this.
But then when you start it.
I know you get mad at me.
I don't care.
No, you don't.
I thought you did great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That means a lot to me.
I actually like it when you do the sponsors because with my speech stutter, I tend to mess up the words and sometimes I say the wrong stuff. Like, do you remember that one time when that lawyer sponsored us and he's like, all right, if you ever need a drunk driver, call us? And I said, all right, guys, if you ever need a drunk driver, call Uber. And he was like, no, you said call us. I was like, oh, I thought your last name was Uber.
Yeah, I recall something along those lines in the back of my mind. I tried to put it away, but Uber.
Yeah, I thought that was the lawyer.
Isn't that strange? Isn't that funny?
It's Asperger's, man.
But I swear, since the day I met you, you're one of the clearest. When you're on stage, there's not a word that it's so clear. So when you say that, it's funny you say that, because when I see you doing your comedy, it's like, God, there's not a word.
Well, you know what?
I mean, it's completely, there's nothing.
Well, you know what
it is? Clear as day.
I think because, like, I'm so used to doing stand-up, I'm not, like, podcasting and radio, we've been doing it for a few years.
You do this very well.
But we only do it for like 16 weeks, then we stop for the year, then we come back. So like I don't do it as much where like I could just have the words zip out, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm not like Mark Maron.
Oh, he's one of my friends.
Mark Maron.
I'm sorry, now I fucked it up.
What?
No, Mark
Maron. You can't curse on that air.
Oh, my God.
What are you doing?
No, we thought we could.
It just cost us $5,000.
No, I think our guest curses.
What?
I think all our guests, most of them curse.
Oh. All right. Well, we should probably mention our guest today. Today is a very special episode of Razor Riffs. We got this guy. He's one of my heroes as a writer because I grew up watching his films. He wrote Joe Dirt, Tommy Boy,
one of my
Dirty
favorites.
Work. He was the head lead writer of SNL from 90 to 96.
Worked with Farley,
Spade, Norm Sandler, and the great Fred Wolf.
Fred Wolf is the man tonight. Yeah. Today.
He was supposed to come in the studio, but something happened. We'll find out what happened. But he has a new movie coming out that he wrote and directed called Drunk Parents.
That's hilarious.
You saw it?
No, I saw little clips of it.
Oh.
It's about, two drunk parents. No, I'm just kidding. No, it is about that. And they're trying to hide their financial screw-ups from their daughter.
Oh, way to spoil the movie. It's not out.
It's not a spoiler. There's a synopsis.
Well, just tell them you didn't say it.
I didn't say it. Okay. In fact, it's not about that. I don't know what it is. About two aliens.
But it has Alec Baldwin, and it's called Drunk Parents. And
Alec is one of my favorite actors, Baldwin.
We're going to give him a call. I really hope Fred likes me. Okay, so when he picks up, let me say hi, and then I'll introduce you because you tend to butt.
No. I'm not even here.
Okay. Really? So calling the great Fred Wolf.
Hello.
Hey, Fred. This is Keith.
Hey, Keith. How are you?
Hey, Fred. This is Alan. You don't have to pay any attention to me.
Okay. Alan, it's going to be really hard to do.
Thank you.
To not pay attention to you because
I appreciate it.
I have a feeling that you keep this whole thing running.
Oh, yeah. My. This man is already, I love this guy.
Fred, it was weird because right before I called you, I said, Alan, all right, let me introduce you. So, and then right when I was about to do it, he's like, hey, I'm Alan. Nice. I was like, geez.
I couldn't control myself. That's what I've always had a problem.
This isn't going to work out between you two because... Alan, next time, wait for Keith to introduce you.
Okay.
It's a proper introduction. Plus, he might say something really nice.
That's true.
But you jumped in and just decided this is going to be your show today.
I know. I just walked over the lines.
Jesus. You guys don't know me that well. I think I started off where if you thought I was serious, this would be a disaster.
Oh,
but
that's good to hear.
I'm kidding around. So, do you mind just tell me real quick, what sort of topics and so forth are you going to be talking about?
We're just going to talk comedy and your career and
anything you want.
I got this. And basically we just joke around and stuff, and if there's anything you don't want to answer or don't want to talk about, you just we respect it,
Yeah, no problem at all. Like I said, I'm flattered that you asked, and you had some good people on. Some of those guys are friends of mine, and they are entertaining people. I don't know if I could. For instance, I lose when it comes to Norm MacDonald versus me in the interest department. But
I open.
He's
for
a
Norm.
Funny guy.
Yeah.
You open for him? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I do stand up and I open for Norm. I did Vegas with him a couple weeks ago, and when I started comedy, it was weird because Norm's always been my favorite stand up. I have three favorite stand ups of all time: Norm, Jeremy Hotz, and Spade. And I open up for two of them. You know what I mean? So, I've been very
That's
blessed.
Incredible. That's excellent. I actually shared an office with two of the three of your favorite comics of all time at Saturday Night Live.
Oh.
It was me, Spade, and Norm, and Sandler. But we, they're really funny guys.
Oh.
They're just really funny.
They're geniuses.
No doubt about it.
They're geniuses, too. On stage, they make everyone happy and laugh. And I think that, I think that's the most important as a comic because you're getting away from your issues or whatever, but you're making everyone else peaceful. I think that's why comedy is so beautiful. Does that make sense?
Every once in a while someone says something like that, which makes me feel better about the fact that I devoted half my life to writing stupid little jokes, hoping people laugh. But it actually is a pretty good. It's not a bad thing to be doing out there. Better that than spraying graffiti all over the place. But Norm never wrote. I never saw him writing a joke down.
Oh, really?
I never saw. Yeah, I never saw bullet points for his act. I used to, when we were there in New York, we'd run out and if he did a gig, I'd open for him as well. like you did. You probably did better than I did, but he just never seemed like he needed to organize his stuff. He never seemed like he needed to get his head together right before his set. Mm-hmm. He just went out there and was able to just belt out some of the best stuff ever written. Just great stuff. But I never saw him writing, like, for his act, I mean. Wow. And I don't know how he does it. Spade writes out little ideas he's, you know, comes up with during the day. But, man, I don't know how these guys do this, where they don't. I mean, Keith, when you're doing your stand-up, do you write out the jokes you're going to be doing that night, or order it up, or how do you do yours?
Well, I used to when I first started, because like I have autism, so like when I first started, I wasn't very comfortable with my jokes and stuff, and the more I did it, I got more comfortable, and it, like, you know, it all flowed better because, you know, I was comfortable being on stage and not on stage. So when I first started, yeah, I did write the jokes, but then and I think I also learned that from, you know, opening with Norm. I just go up and be free, you know. So
yeah, well, what's kind of cool about that, first of all, I don't know what your spectrum is on the autism, but like
I have Asperger's. Yeah,
I'm sorry, what?
Asperger's syndrome.
Oh yeah, Asperger's. Yeah, yeah. I have three brothers, and one of them has Asperger's, and it's interesting. His thing is computers, which it's worked out. Who would have known? But the having yours is like concentrated around the idea of comedy or writing, or what is it?
Yeah, comedy and writing. And I just wish someone would have told me there's no money in comedy.
Man, it is true. It is a struggle. And then half the time, I just remember, I did comedy during the 80s and stuff, and actually that's how I met Norm and Spade and all those guys. It was before Saturday Night Live. We were all friends, but I do remember not having any idea what the goal was. I just wanted to go on stage and tell jokes and see which ones worked and all that stuff, but I didn't have a business plan or anything like that. No thoughts in terms of where it was going to lead, yeah, or what where the finish line was. And in some ways that was great because, like you just said, I was free to just do whatever I was doing without worrying. And in other ways it was crazy because, you know, you're wasting, maybe 8 to 10 years of your life that could be spent going to school and taking accounting classes or something. Yeah. So if you got to do it, you got to do it. And I felt like I had to do it. Sounds like you did too.
Yeah.
And it serves us well, but then you say there's no money in it. I'm sure that's true these days. There's so many guys out there trying to do it.
Well, I'm in for it for the love, because I like making people happy. And so, like, that's why I'm in for it. And I actually saw you, believe it or not, do stand-up comedy maybe 3 or 4 years ago at the Improv. You came with Spade and Farley, and you did a set.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Kevin Farley or...
It was Kevin Farley, and I remember.
Oh yeah,
I remember one of the jokes that you did. You had a piece of paper, and you said, "A lot of comics like to write down their acts, but I think it's too much of a hassle."
Good memory. Yeah, it's a lot of comics memorize their stuff, but it's such a hassle. Man, you have a good memory, because I remember that set. Because I basically perform maybe about twice a year now.
Yeah.
I'll just like in that case, just open for Kevin or Spade or pop on with them. But there's a, first of all, thank you. That's great that you remember that joke. And I have to say, it almost always kills. It's one of those little perennials that works. But it's also my way of looking at the list, what we were just talking about. I actually have my stuff written on that page that you saw. And I used to get mad at myself thinking, like, why do I need this written out? Or why do I need to organize this stuff? And that's what made me realize that maybe my heart is more on the writing side of things, because I loved trying out new jokes that I had just written. Yeah. That was sort of what I really, really looked forward to being on stage for. And ultimately, these guys, like Norm and Spade, when I shared an office with them, I would see them effortlessly just kill and like want to be on stage. And I realized, looking at them, how talented they were and how I probably didn't have what it takes to be a really good performer like they are.
Yeah.
But I did okay with the writing side of things. And that's what I loved to do with stand-up. I just loved the new stuff, loved trying it out, and ultimately, it just seemed like the segue was the right one to make for me, you know?
Yeah, I actually, have a show tonight, and you know, you were supposed to come to the studio because you were going to be in LA, but I guess something happened, and I'm very grateful for the phone interview. But I was going to try and talk you into coming to the show and have you do some time. And I'd be like, oh, my God, I get to perform with Fred Wolf.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Oh, man, I would have loved to do that. You know, because, first of all, thanks. That would have been nice. You know, I opened for Dana Carvey was doing a gig up at this place called Hornblowers, or it used to be called Hornblowers. I forget. It's up in Santa Barbara, near Santa Barbara.
Right.
And, man, I don't ever brag about myself getting laughs. But I went on stage before, and I was supposed to do 5 minutes. You know,
yeah.
He just said, hey, you want to do 5 minutes? I said, sure. And I absolutely blew the roof off. I was, like, shocked,
yeah.
You know? And I got about maybe 7 jokes out. The rest of the time, I was standing there while they were laughing. First of all, Carvey gets the best crowds in the world. But secondly, it's just one of those hot nights. Yeah. And I thought, man, I miss this. This is great.
Yeah.
But I actually haven't been on stage since then. And so I probably would have done what you're talking about. What kind of gig is it? Where is it at?
It's actually in Huntington Beach. I would have like bought you gas money or something with the money I don't have, but I definitely would have like taken care of you so you don't lose money to get there. But it fits about 100 people, and it's called the Rec Room. It's like a Melrose Improv type, very like they're there for comedy, and it's
kind of a new room.
Yeah, it's a beautiful venue
down there.
And what, you are able to get on fairly regularly at this place?
Yeah, I feature there once a month. And so, like, if you ever want to do comedy, just give me a call and I could get you a date and we'll do it together. I mean, that's not a problem. But, yeah.
Hey, I'll definitely do that.
Oh,
I'll
yeah.
I'll definitely do that. How much time would I have to do?
However much time you want.
Oh, man, I would do that for sure.
All right.
Because, man, I definitely would do that. I mean, like 10 to 15 would be fine then, huh?
Yeah, whatever you want. I could.
Wow.
Yeah. It would be an honor to perform with you.
Well, that's nice of you to say that, Keith. You know, I'm not a draw at all. I mean, zero draw.
I don't care about that. You make me laugh, and like your joke style is like very like I like that because it's very similar to mine. I remember you told this joke about trophies, how you went to a trophy shop with your dad, and your dad was like, oh, this guy must be really good.
Yeah, he's really good. Spade actually stole that joke from me. We're friends. You know, I stay with Spade when I'm in town, actually. But he was doing some gig somewhere, and he said he just threw that joke out just to, because he's always like that joke, too.
Yeah.
And he said it killed, and he was saying, can I have it? It just killed. And I said, man, it's like, yeah, I should give it to you, you know, I should, because I'm not doing stand-up that much.
Yeah.
But now that I know you want it, I'm not going to give it to you, because I'll always have that to hold that over you. Is like, if you're nice to me, maybe I'll give you that trophy joke. But I'm not just going to hand it over to you just because you asked me for it. Your name is some of the jokes that I actually personally love, too. So how do you remember this stuff? I guess you do have Asperger's.
Yeah. Well, like, because
it's a good, right, good one right there.
Yeah, and like basically my whole life, because I actually went back, I'm going back to school for screenwriting, you know, because I dropped out to do comedy, and I probably should have reversed it, you know what I mean? Like, stayed at school, do screenwriting, and then do comedy. But now I'm actually okay at comedy, and I'm bad at screenwriting. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I went to Penn State and University of Montana and Montana State, did about 2 years, and finally said, you know what, I'm going to drop out because I want to do stand-up comedy. And so I did the same thing you did, and then eventually got into screenwriting and sort of learned it on my own, I think. So I don't know. I don't know if you have to do what you just said you have to do, but obviously you do whatever you think you need to do. But I don't know. I don't know if that's necessary. Mm-hmm. You feel like it is?
Mm-hmm.
To go to school for that?
Well, I mean, I need to for screenwriting because I don't know the proper format, you know, and I have a lot of ideas that I want to send out and stuff, but they have to be proper, you know what I mean? So I look ridiculous.
Final draft proper?
Yeah. 90 pages or whatever.
Yeah. It's in the software, I thought.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. You do it like
this is Alan.
Do whatever you want. I don't care. Final draft, classes.
Yeah, Alan cares nothing about you. He actually just sits nearby and right. actually roots against you. It's
That's
a
right.
sad thing.
Beautiful.
We're all trying to figure out how to tell you that you got to get rid of this Allen guy. Bad angel on your left shoulder.
Fred, please.
My last. I'm the good angel on your right shoulder.
My last gasp here.
You want? Can I tell you my college story regarding what we were just talking about?
Of course.
And showbiz and all stuff. So I was going to Montana State. Wait, I'm going to get this right. Montana State. I was going to University of Montana, excuse me. That's in Missoula, you know. Uh-huh. And my major was radio and TV. Mm-hmm. And because I also wanted to write. I figured maybe one day I'd write movies like the Marx Brothers or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
And so my radio class I loved because I loved radio. I used to love the idea of telling jokes over a microphone and having people out there maybe listening and all that kind of stuff. I just really loved it. And so everybody in the class that I went to, they liked it too, but I liked it enough that I went out and got a job at a radio station while I was in college. Yeah. Started at minimum wage. I just had to rip out the UPI news and stuff and sort of organize it. And then DJs would read the news at the top of the hour and so forth. And one day they said, hey, do you want to go on the air? And I said, yeah, of course I do. And they said, then let's do it tonight because what's-his-face called in sick, you know. It was that loose. This is in Livingston, Montana, right?
Wow.
So I started being a DJ for about maybe 3 months, and then still going to school, you know, and the professor, I think the story is pretty good, by the way. I think it's going to a place where you'll be kind of interested in it.
Yeah.
So the professor has an assignment, the radio class professor. He says, we have a campus radio station. I want you, for your final assignment, to do a 5-minute air check. Spin some records and maybe do a little patter and do the news or whatever, and you hand in 5 minutes. You record it, and you hand me 5 minutes of you doing it, and that's your final project. And there was a campus station that had, like, old, outdated equipment and so forth, but that's where everybody was going to do their project. In my case, I had a real radio station, and I was a DJ, and so I did a 5-minute air check of actual on-air stuff. And by this time, I was doing okay. You know, I was writing my own little jokes to say, and I'm sure it was hacky, but at least it was like a real deal. It was a real station, you know?
Yeah.
So I go to hand it in, the project, and I drop it off at his office, and I go, hey, I'm Fred Wolf, and here's my project. I did an air check at KPRK. And he went, oh, okay, look at the clock, the campus clock out the window. And I see it, and he goes, what time does it say? And I said, noon. He goes, it's not noon. This is a true story, about it. He goes, it's not noon. It's 2 minutes after 12. Ooh. The assignment was due at 12, but you're bringing in 2 minutes after 12. So I'm docking you a letter grade for every minute past noon. So the best you can do now is get a C. And I said, well, 2 minutes after 12, what's the real difference, 12 and 2? He goes, in radio, you can't be late. You can't be 2 minutes late. You got to be there on time. Yeah. So there's not dead air for 2 minutes. And I said, well, I am on radio. This is a real radio station here, and this is my air check. And he goes, that's not a good excuse. A C is your best grade. So I went back to the dorm, and I packed up my stuff, and I left 2 days later, dropped out, and said, that's it. Screw it. I'm going to go do it. I'm going to move to L.A. and just go do stand-up and radio and whatever else I'm going to do because of his attitude, and it just mm-hmm. didn't feel right
yeah.
that he's telling me how to be a DJ and how to be responsible, mm-hmm. and yet I was the only one in the class who was actually working at a station. So I did
minutes.
What I did, and then years later, I was on Saturday Night Live, and Bill Pullman was the host of the show, that particular show. Mm-hmm. Independence Day was out, and and we were talking, he and I were talking, and then he said, yeah, I started out as a professor. And then he goes, I was just like teaching kids how to act and do showbiz, and I had never done it before. And I found myself getting more and more bitter. And I said, you know, I got to go out there and just do it. And so I left the professorship, and I got into acting, and here I am hosting Saturday Night Live. And I said, oh, wait, where'd you teach? He said, Montana State University. And I go, what? And there is a possibility, because we talked yeah. about this for about maybe 10 minutes. There is a possibility that he was that professor.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah,
I mean, he's such a nice guy. I mean, he's beyond nice.
So
Pullman.
Wild.
But he was saying, yeah, that could have been me. It could have been me because that's how I was. That's what I'm talking about. I was bitter. I would have said something like that, maybe.
God,
you know?
He said bitter, no less.
And I'd love to know for sure it was him. I don't remember who the professor was, but he thinks it was him. He thinks it might have been him because he would say something like that. I think it might have been him, too, because he was there exactly when I was there. So
that's awesome.
That was kind of cool.
That's a story.
So
I would have been like...
The moral of the story is if you go to college, if Bill Pullman's your professor, drop out.
That's great.
I would ask Bill, I was like, well, now that I know you're my professor, can you change that grade to an A now or something?
Yeah, yeah. You'd say you got consent for the transcripts.
That's hilarious. Yeah, wow. Open up the transcripts. That's hilarious. I actually never thought of that.
Well, that's almost like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
God damn, that is true. That'd be cool.
Yeah. But I also, like, another example, like, I know a lot about trivia and goofs, and this actually involves you to because you wrote Dirty Work, and which is a great movie. I love Dirty Work. Right. And there's a scene where, because you're a homeless guy, where Norm says, hey, homeless guys, I'll give you guys $2 if you run around, and he says $2 each. And then at the end... one guy says a monologue, and he just gives the guy $2. Norm never gave you the $2.
That's a good
option. Did you ever notice that?
Is that right?
I think I did at the time, or something. Yeah. I gotta watch that movie again. for some reason, and I don't know why, people started telling me, like, the last 6 months, I've been hearing a lot of Dirty Work stuff. Like, I don't know if it's because they're playing it or something on Comedy Central or something.
Right.
But I've been hearing a lot of people, it's really, really nice, saying, talking about Dirty Work. And, you know, it wasn't a huge box office sensation, that's for sure. But, man, we had fun making it. And I was one of the bums, like you just said, and Jim Downey was one of the other bums with me. I don't know if you know who Jim Downey is, but
I've heard
he's sort of the Saturday Night Live. He's the big cheese there, Lorne Michaels and Jim Downey, and I had a blast doing that. But that's hilarious you remember that, and it's also hilarious that you would remember it to that that degree that I should be outraged I didn't get my $2. And Bill Pullman screwed me over on the letter grade. I'm getting really upset here. This is a really bad day for me.
Because, like, if I was a homeless guy in a movie, I'd be upset if I did a job and I didn't get the $2, you know? But
that's a motivation. Yeah. There you go. Motivation.
By the way, that's classic Norm, too. Wouldn't it be, homeless guy, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah, I've been trying to...
I did this movie, I co-wrote and directed this movie called Drunk Parents, right? And it's
we were just talking about that when we called you.
What's that?
We were talking about that film.
Yeah, Alan said some clips.
Listen to this. You'll understand my agony here. Is I love the movie and all that, and we shot it in the winter in New York City. That was tough, but I have some cameos, two bums. And one's Will Ferrell, and the other is Colin Quinn, two of my favorite comedic actors and comedians of all time. And the third one was going to be Norm, and it was going to be three bums, just like in Dirty Work. There was three bums, and it was a little bit harkening back to Dirty Work, but it was also it was a pretty cool scene. And those three guys would have been incredible, because of each one uniquely funny in their own way and brilliant and geniuses and all that stuff. And Norm couldn't make it at the last minute. And I'm really happy that Will Ferrell and Colin Quinn are in the movie. But I have no idea what would have happened with Norm in the mix there. But I know that the cameras would have been running and I would have caught some gold.
Yeah.
And it almost happened. But shoot. Yeah. Norm fucked me over and fucked up.
He owes you.
What a bastard he is.
He owes you.
Well, if you ever do Drunk Parents 2,
we're
and
here.
You could do the exact... That's weird.
But I'm ready. I'm ready to play the drunk.
Let me finish this. After you do Drunk Parents 2 and you want to redo that scene and Norm does it, have Alec Baldwin not give Norm the $2.
That's good. I like that.
Yes.
They like
I like it too. By the way, Alec, in the scene, he refers to them constantly as bum. So he'll say, "No, bum, I don't have $5 or whatever it is." And that is absolutely the cadence of Norm. That's how I wrote it, with him in mind. Not his part, just what Alec says to them in the rhythm and cadence of Norm MacDonald.
That's interesting.
No, bum, I don't. Hey, bum, stay away from that, bum. Bum, leave the gas can alone. And it is actually my favorite scene in the movie because of that, the Normisms in there.
Yeah.
And it would have been great to have the master of Normisms, Norm himself, in the scene, but I'll live with that, I guess. But you know how cool that would have been, right?
Oh, that would have been awesome.
That would have been awesome.
I actually want to see that movie because I have an Alec Baldwin story, if you care to hear it. I mean, if you
well,
don't want, okay. So I did stand-up comedy in Ventura, and a lot of my comedy, I talk about my autism, and this guy came up to me, and I sell merch, I sell lollipops, and this guy came up to me after a show, and he bought my entire case of lollipops, and he gave me like a $100 bill, and they're only a dollar each, and I think I had like maybe 20 lollipops. And he said, "You're very funny. My son has autism, and you know, you're a real inspiration." And I was like, "Oh, thank you. Has anyone ever told you you look like Alec Baldwin?" And he's like, "Well, my name's Daniel Baldwin." I was like, "Oh, has anyone ever told you you have the last name of Alec Baldwin?" And they look so similar.
They do.
And I was like, "To me, you look exactly like Alec Baldwin." He's like, "Alec's my brother." I was like, "Oh, that's a nice cover-up, Mr. Alec Baldwin." And then I Googled it after, and he does have a brother named Daniel. And it was that guy.
Oh, my God. That's right. He really was Daniel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Billy, Steven, and Daniel. And by the way, I like the rhythm of, "Hey, anyone ever tell you you look like Alec Baldwin?" Yeah. And... "My name is Daniel Baldwin. Anyone ever tell you you have the same last name as Alec?" That's a really good rhythm joke there. So do you do that joke?
Yeah.
Oh, you do that joke?
Yeah, okay.
I do. Because I was going to ask you for it. That's a really funny joke.
Oh, you could have it.
That's great.
Have it. It's all yours.
I could have it?
Yeah, I'll drop it. You got
it. No, you don't have to drop it, but are you sure I can have it?
Yeah, totally yours.
Oh, I don't know if you should be giving away stuff like that. That's gold.
You're the great Fred Wolf. I'm honored to have you have it.
Wait, Keith, are you serious? Because I would love to have that joke. It's a very funny joke. It's really clever. It's really funny, and I love it.
I am 100% honest. I would be so honored if you have that joke.
Oh, Keith, man, this is great. So this was worth the podcast alone. I am going to... Then take it. I'm going to take it because you said yes over and over again.
Yes.
Because I really like that joke that much. It's a really weirdly clever joke.
Awesome. Yeah.
But I wait, why don't you think about it?
No.
You think about it, and tomorrow you email me and say, "Hey, still on, you could have that joke." Okay?
I've already thought of it. Have it. It would because, you know, you would make people laugh too with it, and
that would put
a lot of love in my heart.
I'm
honored that you want it. You have it. It's yours.
Okay, how about this? Okay, thank you. How about this? I do want that joke very much. And if I use it in a movie, anytime you tell the joke on stage, you can say that you wrote this joke for whatever movie it is. If it becomes famous, I don't want people thinking that you are stealing jokes from a movie. And you could tell the joke and then say, "By the way, that joke is in whatever movie it is, and I wrote it in that movie," or something like that, right?
Nice.
That would make me feel better.
Sounds
and
fair.
And then,
yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's a deal, because I love it. Yeah. That's great. And so Daniel Baldwin, so by the way, not to miss the main point of that, so Daniel Baldwin, A, has an autistic kid, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And... B, what a nice guy. He bought 20 lollipops, gave you $100 for it. And C, you must really have a funny act for him to come up and tell you that it's inspirational, because he wouldn't come up and tell you that if he just sucked up there. So that's a great story, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think he only gave me $100 because I didn't have any change, but I mean...
Yeah, he's a prick like that. But No, but where was it? Where was the gig?
It was at this place called Ventura Harbor Comedy Club, and I did.
Oh, I think that's. Yeah, I think that's. Is that the one that's like upstairs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been there?
That's where I performed with Carvey. Yeah,
oh,
that's where the Carvey gig was. Yeah. Back in the old days, that used to be called Hornblowers, and they redid the whole thing. Yeah, that's where the gig was.
That's a great club.
So is it run by Randy Lubis? Is that right?
Yeah.
Ah, that's great. That's excellent.
I love Randy.
Man. Hey, that's what a weird, symbiotic, crazy, like, you know, everything coming together because... that is the gig I was just telling you was the last time I performed, and that place used to be like a go-to for like once a week we'd go up there and work out stuff because it was booked by a guy named Bob Zaney. I don't know if you know Bob Zaney. And there it was, run by Randy Lubis, who used to do comedy in the 80s as well, and I think now he owns that or partly owns that club or something like that, and there he was. So, man, it comes around full circle, and I got myself a great joke out of that whole Ventura Harbor Comedy Club. Yeah. Very, very cool.
Awesome.
Damn.
Fred, before we continue, I do have to mention the sponsors one more time, and then we have some Twitter questions. So, Alan, since you like doing the sponsors...
I love doing it.
You'll see Alan's radio vote. You're auditioning for radio DJ for Fred Wolf.
Thank you. I appreciate
Action.
That. Okay, here we go. Today's show, Rifters, is brought to you by Hex Sauce. With a Schofield heat rating of 1,760,000 SHUs. Hex sauce is the hottest hot sauce in the world. Every bite is saturated with a taste of 1,000 tortured souls. As its name suggests, Hex sauce turns any meal into a delicious lava and serves humility to your favorite smack talker. Hex sauce is available on Amazon Prime. Hex sauce, you can save 30% on Hex sauce on Amazon with the code HECKSAUS. That's HECKSAUS. Hex sauce. Enjoy.
Now, Fred, what do you think? Does Alan get the part, or do you just want to get the hex sauce?
Don't put him on the spot.
That's all good. It's funny too, by the way.
He wrote that, by the way.
Alan wrote that?
No, Keith.
Is that what you're saying?
Keith wrote that.
No.
Oh, Keith wrote that. Okay.
No, I didn't write it.
With that smooth, silky radio voice. Excellent.
I didn't write it. My friend wrote it. But
excuse me.
Yeah. But Alan wanted to do it
so badly.
He likes doing the sponsors, and I think that's the worst part about having a rate. Like, I love the sponsors, but like. Because with my autism, I also have a speech stutter sometimes, so I always mess up on the sponsors.
They don't like that. No. They want it to be done very, very clearly, and they want people to buy their product. I learned that over the years, how that works. So you guys, Alan, do you do stand-up as well?
Yes, I do, and I try to do the best I can. I still hit all the open mics. And Keith has had me on a few things, and I keep going. You know, I keep going. One of my bits is, you know, you love my bit. I'm so single, I'm dating myself.
Wait, say that again?
You know, ladies and gentlemen, you single, I'm single, but I'm so single, I'm dating myself.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I just ruined.
And so so you're doing the same thing that Keith and I and everybody else does.
Exactly.
Heard of you, you write them down, and you go out there and do the open mics. But Keith, it sounds like you're sort of establishing comedy. I mean, if you're doing these gigs, and
Keith is rolling.
It sounds like you're actually doing well, and you could bring Alan out and get him on stage. You're doing okay, it sounds like.
I'd rather bring you have Alan host.
Oh, you know what?
We'll do Alan host, and then, you, me.
And then Fred,
or me, you, whatever.
And then Fred will give me a deal there. Fred will help me out then, not you.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, no, I'd love to do time before you. How much time do you do generally on stage, Keith?
Well, when I open, when I MC for Norm, he'll have me do 10. When I feature for Norm, he'll have me do 20 to 25. And then the very rare cases when I headline, I do 45.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Norm gives you a pretty steady gig there.
Yeah, I'm the last on his list, but yeah. I mean, I did Vegas with him this month, and I did Irvine, so yeah.
Well, you know, I'm just like, I'm blown away because I loved opening for Norm, because I'm being sincere here. He's a friend of mine, and he's been a friend for a long time. But I never, ever, ever don't love sitting there watching his entire act. You know, a lot of times you do a comedy gig or whatever, and you do your gig, and then you hang out backstage and talk to the comics, and you don't even watch the person on stage because you've seen him a million times. I do not ever miss Norm doing it. I have to see the stuff he's doing. And I'm saying this sincerely. I think we all feel this way about Norm. Is I don't think I've ever seen him say anything on stage that wasn't original, great, incredibly well delivered with that pace and cadence he has, that isn't just phenomenally funny. And he is a genius. That word is used a lot, but Lord God, is he a genius. And you get to be around that. I think probably the funniest guy out there, in my opinion, that's working, doing stand-up right now. My God, that's amazing. That's great.
Yeah.
And Irvine, those are disparate crowds. Those are, you know, Irvine, Las Vegas, there's just a different type of crowd, different type of people. But Norm just belts it out, and he has his act, and I've seen him blow the roof off, and I've seen him struggle. Mm-hmm. But he is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, one time he came into the we're just chatting here. This is all fine, right, Keith?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, this is free form, and you're fine, right? If I just drop in stories here and there.
Yeah, definitely.
How it works. All right. Well, one time, Norm, like I said, we shared an office, and he comes in, and midnight, and he just got back from, he was opening for Bill Cosby. And I said, how'd it go? And it was fine. You know, Cosby's the funniest guy ever. This is way back before any of this crap surfaced about Cosby, you know.
Yeah.
He was just at this time that he was telling the story. He was one of the legends, you know. And so Norm said, yeah, I was opening for Cosby. You know, kind of crazy the way it started off, kind of weird, you know. I go, well, what happened? He goes, well, I go in there, you know, and it's the great Bill Cosby is there, you know. I'm sitting there in a green room, and we're getting ready to go on. And there's the great Bill Cosby, you know. I have nothing to say to him that's of interest. He's heard everything that's ever been said before, you know. And there I'm standing there, I'm just like, comic is opening for him. You don't know who I am, you know. So I just say to him, I don't know what to say. So I go, hey, I can't believe how cool it is that I get to work with you. You know, and I was telling my dad that I'm opening for you, and my dad says that you're his favorite comic of all time. You know, and he said, Cosby goes, well, that's good to hear. Let's get your dad on the phone. I'll say hello. You know, I'm doing a terrible Cosby, but Norm does a great one. And Norm says, no, we don't have to call my dad, but I just want you to know that he idolizes, you know, and he's so happy I'm here opening for you. This is great. And Cosby says, well, I say we should get your dad on the phone, and I'll say hello to him. And Norm goes, well, no, that's fine. We don't have to do that. You know, it's fine. And by the way, the gig is getting ready to start, you know, because I had to figure something out, you know, because, like, my dad had been dead for 12 years, you know, and I was completely making it up, you know, and the guy wouldn't let it drop. He wanted to call my dad, who's been dead for 12 years. And I was laughing so hard at the story, and I think it was true, or maybe it wasn't true, but all I know is it came out gold. It came out as a beautiful gold bit right out of his mouth. I never saw him write it down. Like I told you, I didn't see it. Like I don't know if he ever did it in his act, but good Lord, it was fully formed and perfect.
Yeah, he's told me that story before. And the thing that about Norm, and then I want to do a couple Twitter questions. Norm is the guy who... Like, I love him very much. Like, I look at him as my comedy dad, and I'd do anything for him, you know what I mean? So I'm very glad that, you know, everyone loves him, you know, like you. And, you know, it just really brings a lot of love to my heart when I hear great things about him, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We got a couple of Twitter questions for you. And I actually want to ask you one of them because I think it you know, goes a lot to what I want to do with my life. This is from Willie Me Mike. He wants to know, Fred, how many revisions of screenplays do you do before you send them out?
Wow, I love that question. Damn. So you're asking me that then, and Willie, did you say Willie, what was his name?
Willie Me Mike. It's a Twitter name.
Willie Me Mike.
Yeah. It's probably not his real name.
Well, yeah, you know, it really depends on the script, but I remember, not to name drop, yeah. But I'm not saying Steve Martin is my friend or something like that, but he hosts Saturday Night Live, and I was talking to him one day, and he said, comedy scripts aren't written, they're rewritten. And I said, what does that mean? He said, you write them over and over and over. You revise and revise, and you change and you change and you change. And I always had that in the back of my mind, is that what basically he was saying is that you could always keep working on it. You could always try to make it better or whatever. And so I have sort of OCD in a way. I have to, I can't not look at a script that I've written and do something to it. Do something a little bit, just try to make it a little bit better. And so in my case, I would say it's standard for me before handing a script in, if someone's ordered one up, to probably do 5 overall passes of revisions. So I do the first rough draft, write it out, get about 120 pages, and then start going over it and start fine-tuning it, the second pass. Third pass, I start trying to polish and figure out what's missing. The fourth pass, I fill in what I think is the grout, the stuff that connects it. And the fifth pass, to me, one of the most important passes, is putting the final structure on, what I think the final structure should be. If the first act is a little too long, I want to try to get it down to 18 pages. And then if it's at 20 pages, that 2 pages of cuts takes the most focus to figure out what to do there. And so 5 solid passes is how I usually do it. And then from there on, depending on how much time I have, I'll do another 10 passes, loose ones, just figuring out, okay, is this joke better? Is this joke better? Is this better? Is this better? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the full complete answer is 5 passes on every script. And if I can do it, 100 passes if I have the time.
Wow.
That's true. That's a true fact.
That makes me feel a lot better because I wrote a script and I'm on my like 7th pass, you know, because like I don't think it's perfect enough to send it out, you know. Mm-hmm. So that makes me feel a lot better that 100 is, yeah.
I'm right before you called. I was working on a script here. It's called 9 Bastards, and it's a very, very, very rich guy inherits 9 kids through whatever reason. And I always had this one bubbling around, and I was taking a pass on it. I was thinking, okay, Keith's going to call at 12:05, he said. So that gives me 15 minutes to go over the script again. And this is probably my 200th time on this particular one because I've had the script for like 15 years.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, this is honest, true story. I was thinking, well, I have 15 minutes before Keith calls, and what else would I do? Why not take a pass on the script? And then I started thinking, wait, what am I going to do to the script, though? That is, am I just going to move some pieces around and just do, like, make work for myself? And I thought, no, there might be a chance that there's some joke that pops in my head that just is that much, like, a 0.5% better than the joke that was there, and then the script got a 0.5% better. And so maybe I'm crazy, but I just love the rewrite process very, very much.
Wow,
and 7 passes in your case is a good sign. It's a great sign because I have met writers that are pretty sure it's perfect, you know, after their first or second pass, and that's impossible.
Yeah.
It just can't be, you know.
Maybe
there's a writer out there that can do it. I've never met anybody that can do it.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way.
And if they think they can, I think there's a problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, that's my opinion.
So basically what you're saying is I might be good luck if, you know, you said 15 minutes before Keith calls, I'll do some writing.
Yeah, but now what I got to do is I got to figure out, and it's a great, great, great little puzzle to have, is where is the Baldwin joke going to go? Because, man, I am using that joke.
That's it.
All right.
And remember I said the script gets 0.5% better? That joke will make the script at least 3% better being in there.
Nice.
So that's the answer to the Twitter question.
Awesome. And then we only have time for one more question, but this is from Hi, My Name is Doug. And I think his name is Doug. But he said, Fred, what's happening with divorced dads? I don't know what that means.
Divorce dads.
Divorce.
I don't know if... I wonder if it's a script I wrote, script, or...
Yeah, is that a script you were supposed to do?
Something you saw, or...
Oh.
All right.
Trying
to
think.
So many scripts.
It rings a bell. I wonder... he says, my name is Doug. Let's assume his name is Brian. I have no idea why. But... because there's no way it's Doug, because he's too emphatic. He is protesting too much.
Right.
No, I'm kidding. I wonder if, because the name sounds familiar, the title name, and it's a name that I would have done. And I do have a friend of mine that 10 years ago was working on Bad Dads, but then Bad Moms came out, and that title's gone. I'm trying to think if I did something called Divorce to... Oh, damn! My name is Doug is amazing. we weren't going to call it Divorce Dads. We were going to call it Divorce Guys. Divorce Guys.
Oh.
Holy God. Yeah. Me and Spade and Kevin Farley, actually, were working on it years ago. How does he know this?
Oh.
Who would my name is Doug be? Because it's not Doug.
Maybe it's Brian.
We know that. Daniel Baldwin.
Oh, no. There's the answer. Bingo.
Daniel Baldwin.
Yeah, it has
I like
to be.
That.
It,
like
it has
that.
To be. Either that's his name or his name is Joe Ventura Harbor Comedy Club. Because
I like
that's
that.
How this has
that's
been. Good. This whole hour has been that
wow.
Serendipitous, weirdly cool
synchronization.
Circles, yeah. I wonder how he knows about that script. That's incredible.
Oh.
Well. That's well,
I mean, he would know it. I mean, yeah, a long time ago, Spade and I were working on something for him, and there's four guys that are divorced or about to go through a divorce, and they are going on a road trip to go. Well, I'll tell you, it's based on a true story. Well, how much time do we have?
We have about 3 minutes.
Okay, 3 minutes. I'll just tell you really quickly. I have a friend of mine who, a long time ago, he and his girlfriend broke up, and his girlfriend was furious at him, and so the girlfriend fought for custody of the dog, even though it was really my friend's dog, and she got custody of it, and then she called him up, this is in anger, and said, I just gave your beloved dog to a dog pound, where they're going to put him down, and I'm not going to tell you which dog pound. And it destroyed my friend. You know, he was just really, really devastated. And the movie is based on that. A guy wants to go find the dog in the dog pound, and he's divorced. And his ex-wife did that to him. And I don't know how he knows about the script, but we loved the script, and we wrote it 10 years ago. And it's one of those ones that sits around and tries to figure out when's the right time to get it out there, you know?
Yeah.
Dang. I love it.
Wow. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Fred. I really appreciate
yes, thank
it.
You.
This was awesome.
Oh, it was great.
A blast.
We enjoyed this so much. And I just want to add that I like your taste in cars because I 69 Dodge Roadrunner. Remember you mentioned that. Do you still like Dodges? No, whatever.
I love them. Any Mopar. Yeah.
Mopar. Yes.
I've had four Roadrunners, three GTXs. They're
all right.
They have to be 69. Yeah.
There you go.
So. Well, that's the Joe Dirt car. It's the Tommy Boy car.
Yes.
And Tommy Boy, it was a 67 GTX.
67.
And thanks for that question. I love him. Yeah, I do love Mopar.
Yeah.
I used to road race him up in Montana when I was going to college up there.
All right.
But what a fun thing this was. Keith, I love it. And Alan, too. Sorry.
Thank you.
But I love it. And I got a joke out of this. I had a fun time. Yeah. And I might do a gig sometime here in the future, right?
Beautiful.
Yeah, and I got a friend, so I appreciate that so
much. Thank you indeed, Fred.
So.
Oh, for sure. And say hi to Norm when you open for him. If I don't see him first, I'll tell him hi from you. If you see him first, you say hi from me, okay?
All right. Will do. Thank you so much, Fred. I love you, buddy.
Great.
And
thank
have
you,
a good
Fred.
Day.
Thank
anytime.
You.
All right.
Anytime, guys. All right, man. See ya.
Bye.
Wow, that was awesome.
Man.
Fred Wolf.
Wow. What a cool dude.
Yeah. I know you don't like when I say this, but I thought this was one of the best ones.
You know what? We'll have to debate that.
Wow.
But I think it was fabulous.
So
it was fantastic.
Yeah. I love Fred Wolf.
It definitely fits this one.
We are running out of time. We got to mention the sponsors one more time. You think you could do it really fast, or do you want me to?
If you, I mean, it's
you do it.
Okay. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, Rifters, today's show is brought to you by Hex Sauce with a Schofield Heat rating of 1,760,000 SHUs. Hex Sauce is the hottest hot sauce in the world. Every bite is saturated with the taste of 1,000 tortured souls, as its name suggests. Hex Sauce turns any meal into delicious lava and serves humility to your favorite smack talker. Hex Sauce is available on Amazon Prime, Hex Sauce. You can save 30% on Hex Sauce on Amazon with the code HECKSAUS. That's HECKSAUS, 30% off on at Amazon.com.
Wow. Awesome. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
I think Hex Sauce loves you, because I would have messed it up.
And I love Hex Sauce. Yeah. I'm gonna in fact, I love hot sauce.
Yeah. I forgot my glasses, and I probably would have said Huck Sauce, like Huck Finn.
Oh,
great book.
You're a big Mark Twain guy.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next, because yeah, Sam's going to be like. But guys, if you like the show with Fred Wolf, buy some Hex Sauce on AmazonPrime.com and use the promo code. Also, stand-up dates. I'm performing at the Rec Room in Huntington Beach.
Huntington Beach.
February 22nd and February 23rd with Jeff Garcia. Tickets are at www.recroomhb.com. And if you like the show, please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Subscribe on iTunes. Rate us 5 stars. If you didn't like us 5 stars, rate us whatever. Just give us honest feedback. Write a review. Help the program. We're trying to get to 100 reviews by the end of the year. And we would really appreciate it. And once again, thanks again to Fred Wolf. And we'll see you guys next time.
All right.
Wow. That was such a great show.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.